Well, thanks for being with us today. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. Well, heavy rain, limited sunlight, shallow and sandy soils, a long list of challenges that make Southeast Alaska a tough place to grow food and flowers and just about anything except for spruce trees and hemlocks. But Samia Savelle is here to tell us about her job as a soil scientist with the USDA. And she's going to be helping to grow our knowledge about how to make things grow. She's a presenter at tonight's Fireside Lecture, which will be in person at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. And she joins us now. Savelle, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I want to just point out, I'm actually not a soil scientist, but I am a soil enthusiast.
Okay.
And part of my job is to impart some of that enthusiasm on people because, you know, with talking about soils, you can almost hear people changing the channel to a different radio station. It's like really hard to come up with a title for a presentation about soils that's super compelling. But there's a lot going on there, and that's what I'm hoping that folks who show up tonight will come away with a little bit more appreciation for what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's the building blocks of our terrestrial world here, the soil, and you're actually a resource conservationist. Is that the correct title?
Yeah, that's okay. Actually my working title.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry, I got your title wrong.
Oh, that's
there
okay.
To start with. Tell me what entails. What is that? A resource conservationist, and how does that interact with being someone who's concerned with soil in particular?
Right. So I work for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in an agency called the Natural Resources Conservation Service. We started out as the Soil Conservation Service in the Dust Bowl era of the 1930s when soil was literally being blown from the western states to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, when we were taking soil for granted, you know, I mean, that's
what was going on,
right? Oh, yeah, the soil. You just plant your crops in straight rows and nothing will ever happen.
Yeah, exactly. That was the idea behind my agency was to help farmers and ranchers control soil erosion. And ultimately, we sort of expanded our scope and focus on all natural resources concerns on agricultural and forest and flowers and fiber, all of those things that we enjoy and need to eat and to live in terms of agricultural production.
I mean, to me, it just makes so much sense. Anytime you talk to anyone who's working in the natural sciences, you get to this theme of how interconnected everything is. And,
right.
And so it seems like that's a pretty obvious theme in soil and how to deal with soil and how your the makeup of the soil that's in your area.
Absolutely. And it has an effect not only on conservation, which is the focus of my agency, but in a lot of ways, it directly helps support the economic goals of agricultural producers. And for us in Southeast Alaska, a lot of people we have some farms and farmers in Southeast Alaska, but a lot of folks are gardening for themselves or their families or friends. And so getting people to really focus on their soil quality can not only help them improve their productivity, but it can actually save money in some ways if you really drill down into it.
So, it's interesting because you look around Southeast Alaska and the dominant color is green. I mean, things grow here, big things grow here. But maybe the things that we think of as the foods that we want to grow or the crops or the flowers that we want to grow don't grow. So what are some of the hints and what are some of the reasons that that happens that way? And what are some of the ways that people can change the soil to adjust to what they want to grow?
Yeah, so soil is a pretty complicated thing. So we like to say that, you know, dirt is what you wash off your clothes when you come back from an outing or are done gardening. But soil is what is the medium that you're growing in. And there's a whole living community under the surface. And there are a lot of different microorganisms and fungus and invertebrates that live in the soil and are really critical for nutrient cycling that then makes those nutrients available for your plants and helps to support the plants that are growing above ground. So there are a variety of things that people can do to help sort of cultivate and support that underground community that then results in a better garden, a healthier crop, and better productivity for folks.
It seems like the soil in a lot of forest environments are based on that cycle of fire, downfall, regeneration of the soil through that. But that's not something that I don't understand that to be something that's part of what happens in the Tongass, right? Fire is not a big component of what happens in the Tongass, from what I understand. So how does this area adjust to what normally is a nutrient base for other soils?
Soil is, it has a really lengthy definition, what that term soil means, but what it really comes down to is the underlying geology, the living organisms that are in the soil, the climate that influences the formation of that soil, and the time that it takes to form that soil. So even though we don't necessarily have fire regime here, of course, but it's those four factors, if you reduce it to the basic four factors of what it takes to form soil, we have all of those things. And of course, what we see on the surface, the trees and the plants, is really kind of dictated by the underlying soil type. And then there's that interaction between the biological organisms and the soil underneath that biology helps to also influence the soil formation over time.
Are there ways?
So it really is a very dynamic system.
Yeah. Are there ways that you typically classify Southeast soil? Like, is it acidic or is it, are there ways that you think when you're talking to other people that know soil, you go, oh yeah, you know, our soil is this,
oh yeah,
this, and this.
yeah. A lot of people may not be aware that there is a whole taxonomic system for classifying and naming soils, really similar to how we have a whole taxonomic system for naming different types of plants, different types of animals. There literally is a taxonomic system for describing soils, and those names and that system corresponds with different physical and chemical characteristics of those soils. And so, yeah, when you get together with soil scientists and they start gabbing about, you know, different soil types, it can leave those of us who don't know that language behind.
Well, give us a little of that. Yeah. Give us a little of that jargon. I mean, how would you describe to another person that's into soil? How would you describe our soil?
Well, I think most people realize that our soils tend to be pretty wet, right?
Sure. Okay.
And actually, you know, when you take a look at what soil is actually composed of, you know, we tend to think of the dirt part, the mineral part that ends up on our clothes, and that's really less than half of what's contained in, you know, a clump of soil is usually less than 50% mineral component, and it can be quite a bit less than 50% mineral component in Southeast Alaska because we tend to have a pretty high organic content in some cases. And actually, almost half of what you would find in a clump of soil is actually air and water. So it's a whole structural community that includes the biology, the minerals, the pore space, which is often filled with air and water. So it's a fairly complex system.
Yeah. Does the I'm guessing the glacial action in our area is a big component of how our soil behaves.
Yeah, and we have very shallow soils in a lot of cases, and so what's growing on the surface, you know, when you're walking around in the forest, a lot of that litter and the development of the mosses that we typically see here. Sometimes that's literally all there is a bunch of organic matter over an underlying geologic formation. So we tend to call them young soils because we are recently deglaciated landscapes. We do have fairly underdeveloped soils. Young soils is another term that people use.
Is the size of the, you know, I think of glacial silt as such a fine particle mineral base. Is that a?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that's a component of our soil. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. So the mineral part of our soil is usually categorized into sand, silt, or clay. And each one of those has a specific definition on how big each of those particles are. So you'll hear sometimes people will refer to blue clay around here. That's the kind of grayish blue material. If you're digging deep or trying to, you know, develop a piece of property, they'll sometimes encounter this bluish layer. And we tend to call it blue clay, but it technically actually doesn't meet the definition of clay. It's really a silt layer that is very low in oxygen. And so that results in that bluish color.
The other organic component I think of a lot in Southeast is salmon. And so I'm guessing that enriches our soil quite a bit and really changes the growth patterns of our soil.
It does. It does. You can, and a lot of people do, use salmon and salmon carcasses in their own garden to help improve the nutrients that are available for whatever it is that they're trying to grow. But of course, yeah, salmon, absolutely, they influence the health and the structure of those soils and the nutrients in the soils near streams where salmon spawn.
Well, we've talked a lot about soil here, just specifically the makeup of the soil, but what is going to be the focus of your talk tonight? Is it going to be more in the lines of how to help people get thriving gardens and tips like that?
Yeah, there'd be some additional background on soils and soil development, but then we're also going to talk about soil fertility and how to monitor nutrients in your soil. And then a lot of folks here are interested, of course, in keeping some of the water out of the pore space in your soil. And so folks in Southeast Alaska and elsewhere in Alaska too are really interested in high tunnels and how to go about, you know, covering your crops, growing crops in greenhouses. And so we'll talk a little bit about that as well.
Hydroponic growing.
Yeah.
Is soil on the way out? Are we done with soil?
Yeah.
Is, you know, come on, this soil out, soils. Oh, that's so 20th century soil.
Yeah, right. That's so old school.
Seems like soil gives you this base of nutrients and minerals and all those things that is kind of a obviously useful. I mean, I'm obviously tongue in cheek there, but it's interesting to think about how there's all these new growing techniques that seem like they're trying to get away from soil.
Yeah, and there are some advantages to that in some cases. And we're not necessarily going to focus on that in tonight's presentation, but there are certainly a variety of ways of growing food and in our environment. As you kind of alluded to at the beginning of this session, we have a lot of advantages in our region, but we also have a lot of challenges in our region. And most of those are related to our climate and the amount of precipitation that we have.
Yeah, the two dominant things. Well, is there anything else that you're going to be covering tonight or any other high points that you want to make sure that maybe catch different people? I know that when I talk to people that are heavy gardeners, I mean, it pretty quickly gets to raised beds and how do they cover things like that? Or is that going to be up for discussion tonight as well?
Right. We'll touch a little bit on that. I'm really going to focus on soil health and monitoring your soil fertility and improving your soil health and some of the concepts that you can apply in your own particular situation to help improve the soil health. And hopefully that will also support improved crop production above the ground.
If people want to monitor their soil fertility and health, are there special tools they need? Are there special, litmus paper things that they might, what are some of the basic tools to doing that?
Yeah, we recommend that people collect soil samples and have them analyzed. We don't necessarily recommend using the little kits that you can buy at the store. Those are fun, great activities for kids, but it really only costs about $20 to have a soil sample analyzed. And the information that you get from that is very detailed, it's very accurate, and you can utilize that as a basis for a nutrient or a fertilizer recommendation that is tailored to fit your particular needs. So it's pretty cheap, and you get a lot of great information out of having your soil samples analyzed by a lab.
In a typical yard, do you need to sample from different sections of the yard, or is the soil going to be basically the same throughout the yard? Or how do you kind of know if I'm sampling all the right places?
There are a couple of really great resources at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service website for sampling soils. There's one in particular that is specifically about soil sampling, and it provides a lot of information for making those types of decisions. How many samples do I need? Where should I take them? How do I collect them? So we'll touch on some of that this evening during the presentation as well. But the short answer is yes, you may want to take more than one sample. It really depends on your particular situation and how big of a growing area you have.
Well, that's really good advice. Going to the UAF website, the Cooperative Extension Service, as part of that. So you're not just taking soil, putting in a paper bag, putting a stamp on it, and sending it off. You're doing a little bit.
Right.
A little bit more.
A little bit of intention is needed. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Well, Samia Savelle, thanks so much. She's going to be speaking tonight. Let's talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts of that. And we've got Lori Ferguson Craig up next here we're going to talk to, so she'll be able to talk to us all about the fireside chats as well. But that's at 7 o'clock tonight, and it's in person.
Yes, it's only the second one since 2020 that is being offered in person. You do need to get tickets, so the tickets are free, but they're controlling how many people can attend in person. And so that's through the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center website. And they do have a link to the Eventbrite site that will allow you to get those free tickets if you want to come in person. And then it's also going to be broadcast through Facebook Live. And you can find that link on the Facebook page for the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. And I'm super excited that Lori Craig is right after me, because she can give all kinds of details on how the Fireside Lecture Series developed over time. And it's really a great resource for our community.
That's good. That's exactly right. That's a great preview for what we're going to be talking about. We're going to talk a little bit about the history of it and even some of the fun things and traditions that hopefully will start up again now that it's in person again as well. So we'll be talking about that in just a minute. But thank you once again, Samia Savelle, resource conservationist with the USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Services Program, speaking tonight of everything you ever wanted to know about Southeast soil.
About soil.
All right. Well, that sounds great. Thanks so much, Samia. Have a great talk tonight.
Thank you. Take care.